The following Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, February 24th, 2025.
The woman in your life will do what she must do to comfort you and calm you down and let you rest now. The woman in your life, she can rest so easily. She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you.
Wait, do it again.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Women's Spaces. My name is Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm your host. With me at the board is my co-producer, my engineer, my webmaster, my friend, and my partner, Ken Norton. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Elaine.
What a wonderful, wonderful day here in Sonoma County. This is the last Monday of the month celebrating Black History Month, and the theme of this celebration is African Americans in Labor. The Civil Rights Movement was a major event in the United States history. Joining me on the phone from Los Angeles is Donzale Abernathy. She is the daughter of civil rights leader Ralph David Abernathy and the daughter of Juanita Jones Abernathy. Abernathy was the leader of the African American Civil Rights Movement and close friends and supporter of Dr. Martin Luther King. Donzale, in her own right, is an accomplished activist, actor, author, and has appeared on several TV and radio talk shows. You know, we will be able to, you know, hear some personal stories that were happening and the way that they coped with some of the threats they had, some of the bombings of their homes. I mean, what these people went through to get to make sure that people were able to vote was just, I mean, when you think of the shoulders we're standing on, to me, these are the people that inspire me. When I think of how they stood up, and it's so interesting that the theme is African Americans in labor. You know, the night that Dr. King was shot, the next day he was going to be protesting with the labor movement. I believe it was the sanitation workers. And so it's an amazing, amazing piece of history. So I'm really, really happy to have her on. And of course, this is the last Monday of the month and we do the Women's Spaces Pledge. And I thought I would just do the pledge really quickly right now, just to remind folks what it's all about. You know, I was in the hospital for almost two days shy of four weeks, I believe it was. So it was almost a month in a hospital, and I couldn't believe how many of the nurses and the staff that I gave these cards to. So I'm just going to remind people about what the pledge is all about. And the whole idea is to encourage women to stand up. To stand up and be heard. You know, it was amazing because last Monday was President's Day, and nationwide President Day protests stretched Monday to Santa Rosa. There were hundreds of people that rallied at Old Courthouse Square to openly object to the policies being put forth by President Donald J. Trump and his administration. And it was boy, that was a rough one. Here, let's get this microphone back in its place. There we go. Sorry about that, folks. If this was an indicator of what went on, I mean, I was watching the television. There were so many protests going on across the United States that people were willing to get out and stand up and let their voices be heard. So I'm just going to say the pledge really quickly and just remind yourself. And if you want a copy of the pledge, just go on www.womenspaces.com, hit the pledge, say copy, and you can go put it on Word and you can make yourself a copy. So I'm going to remind folks what the pledge is all about. So let's go. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. My self-esteem depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. Just think about that. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. It depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. And you know, on the 18th of February, Leonard Peltier, he's a Native American activist who has spent the last 50 years in prison. And he was just released on the 18th. And I was watching all the different YouTube presentations of him talking, and over and over and over, he said they could do whatever they did to me, but they did not take away my dignity or my spirit. And I believe that that's what the pledge is all about. My self-esteem does not depend on anything outside of me. It depends on my relationship with myself and my higher power. And when I listen to Mr. Peltier talk, I can feel that energy, and I can feel that belief, that deep belief system that he has, and that he never wavered as far as letting people know that he was not guilty, and that he wanted people to know that he was a decent, loving person, and that he never lost his dignity no matter what they did to him. And they handed him, like this gentleman prior that we were listening to on the Amy Goodman show, she was talking about him being in solitary confinement for something like 30 years. I mean, I can't imagine that. Well, the same thing happened with Leonard Peltier. He had to go into, oftentimes he was in heavy duty incarceration, and he had the spirit inside of him, of the great spirit that they could not take his dignity away. And that's the way we have to think. And I'm so glad that he's out. I mean, it was just, when I was listening to some of the YouTubes, I could not stop but cry. I was just so happy. I was so happy. And to see the beautiful costumes and the lovely dances and all the things that the Native Americans bring to us, I'm so glad. I'm so glad that there was an American Indian movement, that they could stand up and they could have their rituals and they can have their ceremonies and they can do their dances and hold on to their language. Amazing, amazing group of people. They truly, truly inspire me. Well, there's going to be a local peace economy gathering that's put on by Code Pink that's going to be happening February 26th from 5 to 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, which I believe is 8 o'clock to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time where they are. And if you want to find out more information, all you have to do is email Marie, M-A-R-I-E, at codepink.org. That's codepink.org. And you can go on to send her an email. She'll send you all the information and she'll let you know exactly how to register. They're asking folks to register. Well, lots to think about. Well, you know, as we do every Monday, you know, I try to do it at least, we do a section called Our History is Our Strength. And today is the 24th, but this happened in February 27th, 1922. And this was a shocking information for me to find out, is the U.S. Supreme Court upholds the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, which guarantees women the right to vote. I had no idea that there was a protest. Well, it turns out that Maryland refused to accept the fact that women got the right to vote. They were denying it for their state. They did not want anything to do with suffrage. The suffrage were really fighting at that time to try to get the vote, and Maryland said no way, and it went all the way up to the Supreme Court. And what was so interesting is that there was a group, it was a collective group of males who decided in Maryland, I think it was Maryland, I just better make sure about that. You know, I have all these notes over here, and sometimes I can't find my notes, and when I'm looking for them, but it's very, very interesting. I think what happened, because what the men were afraid of is that if the women got the vote, they would vote for prohibition, and guess what, they did. But anyway, that's what happened. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court on February 27, 1922. That was 2 years after the 19th Amendment came in, was voted in. The U.S. Supreme Court upheld the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, which guarantees women the right to vote, which shows you, as women, that ever since we've tried to open our mouths or tried to get a seat at the table, it's been an absolute struggle. And here we are in 2024, where they're just trying to take all of our ability to choose and have rights over our own bodies. I mean, this has been frustration that has been in women's lives ever since they tried to get the vote. It took us 100 years from when they first got the idea to get the vote to even get it, and we only got it by one vote. And then here we go. They go to the U.S. Supreme Court because they want to deny it in one state. But it was, fortunately, we got the vote, and it was solid after February 27th, 1922. So I thought that was an amazing part of history for me. And it shows, it demonstrates the importance of doing research, because you find out all this data, all these little different information. And we live in such a great age where we can just go onto the internet, type in the date February 17th, 1922, what happened, and there it all comes up with all the explanations and everything else that you need to know about it. So I think it's very important that we learn how to do research. Well, it says here, it was Maryland, and there was a short-lived suffrage involvement within Maryland from 1867 to 1874, and then they kind of squashed it, and then all of a sudden, of course, we got the vote, and then they decided to take it to the Supreme Court because they did not want it. But we got the vote, so it's amazing. It's an amazing experience. And the thing that really bugs me when I think about it, how important the vote is, and 13 million people in this country, a free country, did not vote. And now look what we're having. You know, they're trying to take all our freedoms away from us. I mean, next thing you know, they're going to tell us we can't have any elections. So I have my fingers crossed that that's not going to happen. Well, we have a very special birthday that I would like to celebrate, and that happened on February 27th, 1897 was when she was born, and she made her transition in 1993, and that was Marianne Anderson. She was an opera singer. She was the first African-American member of the New York Metropolitan Opera, and she did that in 1955, and I want to honor her. You know, we will be taking a musical break, and I will be playing a piece that talks about the accomplishments of Marian Anderson. And you can hear her sing the song, My Country, 'Tis of Thee. And a special shout out to one of my favorite women, and that's Eleanor Roosevelt, for standing up for her, because they did not want her to sing that song at this gathering in front of the Lincoln Memorial in 1955. So she's going to sing My Country's His of Thee, and then before that there's going to be a little blurb, and that's going to be our little musical break. So Ken, let's get ready to gear that up, a little clip on Marianne Anderson. And when we return, I'm really excited. I'll be talking with Danzeleza Abernathy, the daughter of civil rights leader Ralph David Abernathy, and her mother was Juanita Jones Abernathy, and they were both leaders of the African American civil rights movement. She's an accomplished activist, actor, author, and has appeared on several TV and radio talk shows. And like I said at the beginning of the introduction, she actually called Dr. Martin Luther King, Uncle Martin. So let's go ahead. Let's play that little clip about Marian Anderson. And also we will be listening to her sing My Country, 'Tis of Thee, which was a huge accomplishment. And like I said, a shout out to former First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt. Let's go ahead, and then we'll get Danzeleza on the phone. Ken.
It's open ears. Marian Anderson. Marian Anderson was an American contralto known as the voice of the century. She performed a wide range of music, from opera to spirituals, all over the world. She was born on February 27, 1897, in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. At 6 years old, she became a choir member at the Union Baptist Church, where they nicknamed her Baby Contralto. In 1925, she won a contest organized by the New York Philharmonic Society, which gave her the chance to sing at Lewisohn Stadium in New York. 3 years later, she performs at Carnegie Hall for the first time and receives a scholarship that takes her to Europe. By the 1930s, she is well known on both sides of the Atlantic. In 1936, Anderson is invited to perform at the White House, becoming the first African-American to receive this honor. However, in 1939, the Daughters of the American Revolution denied her request to perform at Constitution Hall because of her race. There was a public uproar that led Eleanor Roosevelt to resign from the DAR in protest. And she invites Anderson to perform at the Lincoln Memorial on Easter Sunday. On April 9th, Anderson gives a moving performance.
And that was Marianne Anderson singing My Country, 'Tis of Thee. And it was such a big deal. I mean, there were protests. They did not want that woman to sing. And she was just a voice that was not going to be silenced. So I think that is just amazing. I mean, it's just, you know, these are the shoulders of the people that we're standing on. These are the people who said, no, we want freedom. We want rights. We want the right to vote. We are Americans. You know, and the same thing is going here. We are all affected right now. And we have to start thinking about that. And I hope as we talk with Don DeLay and we go through the history of the civil rights movement, we can get a new appreciation for what it took to get some of the freedoms that people have. You know, freedom is a privilege. It really is. And it just doesn't come. They don't just drop it on your lap and say, hey, you're free. Everything's okay. We have to work for it. We have to stand up for it. And we have to come together as a community of people. You know, I write this poem. It's called I Am Women. I Am All Women. You know, we have to stand up. We're the ones who bring forward life. Whether you have children or not, it does not matter. You still are ingrained and your body is ingrained in that. Anyway, for you just joining us and you're listening to Women's Spaces here, and I want to remind my listeners that the opinions expressed here are not necessarily the opinions of the station, its board of directors, its members, or Women's Spaces. Well, welcome back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz. And without further ado, I want to introduce my special guest joining me on the phone from Los Angeles is Donzale Abernathy. Welcome, Donzale. Welcome to Women's Spaces.
Thank you, and good morning to you, Elaine, and to all of your listeners, and thank you for inviting me.
It's really an honor to have you, and it was so cute. Donzale called me in the morning. She says, do I have to put on makeup? I says, no, we're on the radio. You know, we can show up anyway. So I just want to welcome you from the bottom of my heart. And is this okay if I tell just a little bit about you, and then I want you to tell us a little bit more about you?
Sure, absolutely.
Donzale Abernathy is the daughter of civil rights leader Reverend Ralph David Abernathy and Juanita Jones Abernathy. She attended Northside High School for the Performing Arts before graduating from George School, a Quaker prep school in Pennsylvania. Growing up, she witnessed key events with the civil rights movement and shared a close bond with the King family. That's the Martin Luther King family. In fact, she called Martin Luther King, Dr. King, she called him Uncle Martin, which I just think that's beautiful. Abernathy and King children spent much of their time together, including performing plays for their parents, sparking Abernathy's interest in acting. Would you like to share anything else other than that? Well, give us a little background. Here you were. You were part of this amazing family. It was during the civil rights movement, and I know there were several things that happened. So why don't we start out talking about, you know, February is Black History Month, and a big part of Black History Month was the civil rights movement. And talk about your family. Who were they, and what was their involvement, and what was the relationship between your father, Ralph David Abernathy, and Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and also the two mothers, Coretta Scott King, and also your mother, Juanita Jones Abernathy. So talk about that, Donzale.
Well, first and foremost, my parents were educators.
So my dad was dean of men at Alabama State College in Montgomery. My mother was a business education teacher, and I would be remiss if I did not let you know that I went to Emerson College in Boston, Massachusetts, where my sister was at Boston Conservatory of Music getting her master's degree. So in my family, the greatest, the most important thing anyone could do was to get an education. And the reason Martin Luther King, my Uncle Martin, was chosen as the head of this Montgomery bus boycott was because he was Dr. King, because he was getting his doctorate. And my dad called him after my dad, the morning after Rosa Parks was arrested. He called Uncle Martin. He said, I need you to join me in this thing I'm doing. And Uncle Martin's like, oh, that's great. I can't. I'm busy. I'm writing my dissertation, which is that paper you write for your PhD. And Daddy said, no. You're going to do this with me. And Uncle Martin's like, oh, I don't know. And my dad said, listen, I'm going to come by the house. I'm going to pick you up and I'm going to take you to all of these meetings because we're going to do this thing. And then at that first mass meeting, Uncle Martin said these words, there comes a time when people get tired of being trampled over by the iron feet of oppression. There comes a time when people get tired of being pushed out of the glittering sunlight of life's July and are left standing in the piercing chill of an alpine November. Work and fight until justice rolls down like water and righteousness like a mighty stream. And with those words.
Well, that's amazing.
People took to the streets.
So you're marked. So what you're saying is that your father was really the driving force behind Dr. King getting involved.
Oh, he was, absolutely. And, my dad was older, and my dad was already working with the Montgomery NAACP. He was the number two man at the Montgomery NAACP, and Rosa Parks was the secretary. And so Rosa Parks was the third woman to be arrested on that Montgomery bus, and she was also cousin Rosa because my mother's sister, Eloise Percival, married Morris Percival, who was Rosa Parks' first cousin. And so Daddy and Rosa worked together. My dad was the only man who was a member of the Women's Political Committee, which was created by Joanne Robinson, a fellow professor. She was an English professor at Alabama State, where my dad was working. My dad had been there. I mean, not only was he an undergraduate, did he get his undergraduate degree there at Alabama State, you know, he was the dean of men, and he also taught sociology at the college. So as an employee, you know, it was just natural. And Joanne said to my dad, Ralph, we need to do this boycott. And so this will be my dad's third boycott. But Joanne had worked with my dad all these years, and she had known about the boycott that he had, you know, when he was president of the student body there at Alabama State. And so, you know, she was like, Ralph, we need to do this. And, of course, you know, he did it, and it was decided they were going to stay up with the buses on December 5th, and the teachers, the women, and my dad were, you know, doing this thing, and my mother was typing out little notes and paying the little children to distribute them through the neighborhood, and it was the women who were literally the ones who were making this thing happen. But, you know, the meetings were held at the churches where the men were the pastors, and then so the men were standing up there as the forefront, and you know, the media, you know, sensationalized the men and not the contributions of the women, but it was the women.
Well, you know,
it was the women.
There's an interesting movie I just watched on Netflix. It's called The Long Mile, and where they talked about the boycott and what the women went through, how they had to walk to work and all the different aspects of that whole boycott. It was really quite a feat. You know, that's what I've been doing over the last month with Black History Month and knowing a lot of these, what I call them heroes, the people that whose shoulders we're standing on. You mentioned the NAACP. Last week we talked about at great length about Ida B. Wells, who is one of the founders. But, you know, we're standing on the shoulders of so many great people that they had so much courage and that we need to have that courage. Well, how old were you when you became, you know, I know that before, while your mother was pregnant with you, I know there was a horrible thing that happened in your family. I believe your home was bombed, if I remember correctly. And you weren't even born yet. But then when you were born, when was your earliest memory? When did you first become aware of what was happening with your family? And what was the impact on you as a young woman, you know, watching all this? I know you say some of the things that were going on that the young kids didn't even know about. You were doing these plays and all these different things to entertain the family to kind of keep your mind off of it. But what kind of impact do you believe it was having on you, your sister, and your family in general, and also the King family?
Well, immediately after I was born, because the fetus experiences in utero what the mother goes through, I literally shook. I mean, shook like I had Parkinson's. My hands and my legs, my feet, everything just trembled for the first 6 months of my life. So that was the impact of the explosion and the trauma that my mother had gone through. And so the fetus experiences is all of this. I had to fight, obviously, to survive because they kept telling my mother that she was going to lose me. But she didn't. So I arrived strong and aware of what was going on. So they telephoned our house every morning and every evening, called my mother the N-word, and said they were going to kill us. So they called twice a day at Montgomery, Alabama. So I was aware. I just grew up being aware. And they did not shield us the way other adults. You know, most adults shield children, you know, they're like, we're having an adult conversation, you all leave the room. That never happened in my home. My parents wanted us to be aware and they wanted us to understand. And the same thing with Uncle Mod and Uncle Retta, when they were all having a group discussion with us as children, we were in the room and they were just talking and they were talking candidly and honestly about it. And as a child of color in the Black community, we don't have the luxury to have our children be unaware of what's going on. Our children must understand and know racism. You must know what to do, how to react, because we confront it on a daily basis. I've already confronted racism this morning, and my morning just started here in Los Angeles. It's just par for the course because of the color of our skin. And so my parents wanted to make sure that we were aware. And my earliest memory, you know, I had so many memories as a little kid, but I'll never forget the morning after the Freedom Riders were trapped overnight in my dad's church in 1961, and Uncle Martin had already moved to Atlanta, and my dad called a mass meeting because he wanted everybody to come in support of the Freedom Riders that had been brutally beaten when they arrived in Montgomery. So they were beaten. Their bus was set on fire in Anniston. Birmingham, they were beaten, but when they got to Montgomery, this other bus, there was a third bus, they were beaten unmercifully. Jim's word, Congressman John Lewis, he was just John Lewis at that point. And I'll never forget waking up in the morning and seeing Black and white students sleeping on the floor in my parents' house. And my sister took the little scissors and cut off my teeny weeny little plait that I had in the front of my head. I barely had any hair anyway. And that trauma of my sister cutting my hair that morning and those Black and white kids on the floor in an integrated situation in my parents' house, it left an indelible impression on my mind and one that I cannot forget. I can still see it right now, coming out of the room and seeing them there. And I don't know where my mother was. But later on that morning, they had the press conference to announce the extension of the Freedom Riders and that the National Guard was going to be there to protect them that Bobby Kennedy had sent in from Washington, D.C. And so, yeah, I remember that very clearly. I remember going outside in the backyard of our house playing, and my mother had to leave us. And when she came back, and there were the white policemen that were standing there in the alleyway by our house looking at us in the backyard.
Wow.
And being... And I had to have been less than four. I was probably three.
Well, but you know,
I remember standing there and thinking, oh, wow, they hurt us. they can hurt us. They will hurt us. And then my mother finally arriving, coming outside, yelling and screaming and saying to the man, if you hurt my children, I'll kill you. And, of course, she wasn't going to do that. But my mother was strong.
Well, talk. You know, that's another thing that I find very fascinating about your story. You know, oftentimes, like you said, the women are left out. You know, it seems like everything kind of becomes very male-oriented. But talk about your mother, Juanita Jones Abernathy. You know, what was her involvement at the time? And then also, how did she instill courage in you? And also, she had a very, very close relationship with the Coretta Scott King. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, so weird. As Aunt Coretta, at the end of her life, she called my mother, and she also wrote her on a regular basis, but she wanted her to understand that she had learned that the best friends she had had in her life were her earliest friends, and that she wanted to thank my mom for being there for her all these years when she didn't even quite understand. You know, it was very traumatic being the wife of. It really was. And I don't think my mother knew what she was getting into with my dad, but she did know that they had told him that, you know, he would probably die before he was 30 years of age because he developed rheumatic fever and, you know, as a soldier during World War II. And so, you know, she didn't think she's going to have that long with him. And she did not know that he and Uncle Martin were going to do this thing. She didn't know, but she did know that her house was the place. And my mother was, you know, determined young woman and strong, and she always spoke her mind. And so everything was held at our house because my mother was this incredible hostess and a great, you know, chef. I mean, she really was a chef. She wasn't a cook. She was a chef. She was a master at all of these things. And her father was in the 1940s listed by Tuskegee Institute for 2 years in a row as the most successful black farmer in the Black Belt in the Deep South. And as, you know, he had beef cattle and he had dairy cattle and he had over 300 head of cattle. And so he would cut a cow in half and have all the meat cut, and then it would go into my mother's deep freezer. And so we always had food. We always had steaks. We always had those things that people wanted. And so my mother would open up her deep freeze and you know, broil these steaks and cook this great meal. And then she would be the hostess. So all these meetings happened at our house. And so my mother, you know, being the fire sign that she, you know, was, you know, she engaged in conversation just like everybody else. And so she always had an opinion. So Uncle Martin would always say, I need to know what Juan thinks. And my mother could call a spade, and she could see. She was wicked smart, and she was quick. You know, when someone is really smart, they're quick. And my mother could quick. She could come right back at you with whatever you were going to say. She could give it right back to you. And she was different from my dad. My dad was really gentle and really calm. And he used to say to me, I need you to think before you speak, Don Philly. Think. And so I became more of a thoughtful, quiet child. Aunt Coretta was more reserved and quiet. I don't think she knew what Uncle Martin was going to get into. I know Uncle Martin didn't know what he was going to get into. But the beauty of it was they were put, Daddy used to say, we were ordinary people put into an extraordinary circumstance, and then we rose to the occasion. It wasn't like this was something that was planned. This was just something that happened.
I remember those days, you know. For myself, I was in a state of shock, you know, because I came from people that came from Russia, you know, that thought America could do no wrong. And then all of a sudden, here you are watching on television, you're watching these young people being sprayed with hoses and putting dogs on them. And then all of a sudden, you get this wake up, like, what is going on here? Just like today, what is going on? So, Don Zalay, we are going to take a musical break. Is that okay with you? Hang on with me for the next half of the show. Is that okay?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, we're going to take, and the song I'm going to be playing, and I really dedicate this to your family, is called Ella's Song. You know, we believe in freedom, we'll not give up. And when we return, I will continue my conversation with Don Zalay Abernathy. She was the daughter of civil rights leader Ralph David Abernathy, and also the daughter of Juanita Jones Abernathy. And when we come back, we will continue the conversation. So let's go ahead and play Ella's song, Ken.
We hope, believe in freedom, cannot rest. We hope, believe in freedom, cannot rest until it comes, until the killing of black men, black mothers' sons, is as important as the killing of a white man. White mother's sons, we who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. The older I get, the better I know that the secret of my going on. When the reins are in the hands of the young who dare to run against the storm. To me, young people come first. They have a courage where we fail. And if I can but shed some light as they carry us through the gale. Struggled in myself, don't mean a whole lot. I come to realize the teaching others to stand up and fight, the only way my struggle survives. I'm a woman who speaks in a voice, and I must be heard. At times I can be quite difficult. I bow to no man's word. We who believe in freedom cannot rest. We who believe in freedom cannot rest until it comes. Not needing to clutch for power, not needing the light just to shine on me. I need to be just one in the number as we stand against tyranny. We who believe in freedom cannot rest.
Yes, we who believe in freedom cannot live until it is here. And I love it that it just expresses the women standing up, you know. And I want to welcome everybody back. You're listening to Women's Spaces, and I'm in conversation. I'm your host, Elaine B. Holtz, and I'm in conversation with Dandelay Abernathy, who is the daughter of civil rights leader Ralph David Abernathy, and the daughter of Juanita Jones Abernathy. And I want to dedicate that song to your mother. So welcome back. Are you there with me?
Song. Oh my goodness. It's relevant for then and really extremely relevant today, which is actually heartbreaking.
Well, it is heartbreaking, but at the same time, freedom is not simple. You know, freedom is something that we have to stand up for continually because it's very vulnerable. You know, there's always these forces. It feels as there's always these forces behind us that want to stop us with our progress, and we have to push back again. So welcome back, Dandelay, you know. And, you know, one of the things that I just find just mind-boggling to me is that some of the things that people did during that time, and one of them was just bombing houses. I mean, I just can't believe that people actually give themselves that kind of permission to do that to other people.
Well, so, you know what? They not only bombed houses and churches. So that night that they bombed my parents' home, they bombed my mother's home, they bombed my dad's church, First Baptist Church, they bombed Bell Street Church, Mount Olive Church, and then they bombed the home of a white pastor, Reverend Robert Gratz. But also, they bombed the Jewish synagogue in Atlanta. because they were angry that Jewish people were sympathetic to the cause of black people. And the thing of it is Jewish people experience racism and prejudice just like black people. They were not allowed to join country clubs, and they were excluded from things simply because of their religion, which is what Muslim people are now experiencing here in the United States of America. And, you know, there are people that are trying to make them hate Muslims across the world. And it's just crazy. You know, no one has the right to tell us who we are, who we should be, and how we should live that one life that we have, or that we should hate someone because they're different.
I'll tell you.
We're all the same in the eyes of God.
What I love people that are different, because that's how you learn. How boring if we were all the same, for God's sakes, you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's a line, I believe, in the Bible that says something about all the flowers in the garden are all different colors, you know? What do we do? I mean, it's crazy. Well, talk about a little bit how were you able to cope with all this? I mean, what kind of message was going through to the young children, especially you and your sister, and how your mother was coping with all this going on with your dad, and then some of the things around the bombings, and how did everybody cope with it? Where did they get their strength? Where do you think they got their strength?
Well, you know, my dad and Uncle Martin used to say, you know, consistently that they believed that they were doing God's will, and that they were called by a higher power to serve. And if they weren't going to do it, then no one else was going to do it. And therefore, they had to do it. And they needed us to understand, as children, you know, that one day they were not going to come back in the house, and that perhaps they were going to be killed, and that we needed to understand that it was way more important. That, and they wanted us to understand that we had endured 244-plus years of slavery, our ancestors. And then 100 years of Jim Crow segregation. So together, that was 344 years that black people were made to feel less than, and were the free labor that built the United States of America. And we were kept in chains and barefoot and forced to work in the fields, like I literally in the most horrific circumstances of any people on the face of the earth. And so therefore they had to do something because it wasn't able to be accomplished prior to. And so it was on them, and that we as children had to do our part. We had to do our part, and we were taught very early. My mother used to say, children are to be seen and not heard. And the other thing is, they brought us together as children. So we all spent 7 days a week together, the two families, because they thought we were safer together than we were separate. So we all went to school together. We all rode to school together. We all rode home from school together. We spent our Saturdays together. We spent our Sundays together. And that's just the way, you know, we were. We were these two families. And then we were safer together. And then we were each other's entertainment. And afraid. I was afraid every single night that I went to sleep. My brother, Congress, wanted to have, you know, testimonies. And so the people from the Smithsonian came and interviewed my sister, my brother, and myself. And they asked my brother the question first because he's the man. He was the youngest, however, which was really strange that they would ask. But they asked him because he was the man. And they asked him what he remembered. And he said, being afraid. And I kept thinking, oh, my God, that's what you remember the most. That's the initial thought. And, of course, every night we went to bed, we were afraid. Every night we went to bed, if my brother wasn't sleeping in the same room with us, we would knock on the wall to my brother to make sure that he was okay. And we had a little code. And then you'd go to bed afraid, because every evening at dinner time, that call would come. And then, you know, calling my mother the N-word, saying that they were going to kill us. And then we would, you know, run very quickly. You know, finish our dinner in silence, run back to the bedroom, finish whatever homework you had, took your bath, and then got into the bed, of course, trembling and afraid, because you were sure that, you know, they were going to bomb the house again, because the threat had already come less than an hour earlier. And then you'd, you know, go to sleep in fear, and you'd wake up, and the sun would be there, and you'd be like, okay, we made it. We made it through the night. We made it one more day.
You know what? What's so interesting about that is that what you were afraid of was just because you were standing up for your rights. You know, it reminds me of what Dr. King said, that always is embedded in my mind. All we're asking of America is to live its promise. You know, and that was what the fear was generated, because you were trying to get Americans to live up to their promise. I mean, I can remember when little Ruby Dee went into when they finally had civil rights and they were going to integrate the schools. I remember little Ruby Dee going into the school and all these adults were screaming at her, you know, this little child, you know, and all she wanted to do was go to school. I mean, it's mind-boggling to me. Well, let's bring it into today's world. How's that? You know, living through the civil rights movement, how would you evaluate it today? I mean, it is stunning the fact that we're even in the predicament that we're in today, that this is happening, that all of a sudden all these rights are being challenged and all these court cases are going on just to hold on to our democracy. What do you think is happening now? And how would you equate it to the movement that you were involved with as a child?
Well, those were white supremacists back then, and then again today, that's what it is. These are white supremacists, and they're trying to literally take over the government, which they have, and they have the legal right, because Americans did not go to the polls and you know, vote to support our democracy. Instead, they voted elsewhere, another way, and subsequently, we are in turmoil today, and people are becoming afraid to speak up. And that is the horrible thing. You have to speak truth to power. And you cannot be complicit and go along with that which you know is morally and ethically wrong. I believe that there is a higher power in the universe, which my dad and Uncle Martin stressed to us. And that when we leave this earth, you're going to have to answer to that. You're going to have to answer, and you're going to have, while we're here, we have to do that which is morally right and which is ethically right. And your fellow human being, regardless of the color of their skin or their religion, are the same as you, and they deserve the utmost of respect. And so today we're seeing fear coming out of the media because of intimidation, because they're being intimidated by people who are, you know, supposedly running our government, and they are dismissing people in the Justice Department whose jobs are to maintain the laws. And so laws are not being followed, and God only knows what's going to happen. They're trying to change, you know, the words and things that are a part of the Constitution that say that even if you're born in the United States of America, you're not an American citizen because of your race. Because you belong to, let's say, your mother was a Latino woman, or your mother is a Latino illegal immigrant. But if you're European and you're Caucasian and your mother comes to the United States of America, she gives birth to you, you're allowed to stay here. But if your skin is olive and your Latino person is not, I mean, that doesn't even compute. But that's what we're experiencing here today in America. And people cannot be afraid, and you cannot be complicit and go along with that which you know is wrong. And people have to ask themselves the question, and what are they going to, oh my God, I might lose my job. I might be fired. Yeah, you might lose your job. But you know what? If you're going to be afraid, my dad used to say, if you're going to be afraid, when you go home tonight, don't get in the bed, because more people died in the bed than anywhere else. So it is more honorable to stand up for that which is right. Stand up for what is morally right. And then furthermore, reach out to your neighbor who is being traumatized and terrorized and show some compassion and help them. And now we're going to need to come together, because we're not going to go quietly into that dark void like they did in Europe in 1935, 98, and 38, 39, 40, 41, 42, 43, all the way to 1945. We're not going to let that happen here. We're not. We're better than that. We're Americans, and we are great because of our diversity, because of our equality for everyone, and because we include everyone. That's what makes America so great.
You know something, the way you said that, it just gives me chills. I couldn't have said it any better. I mean, it makes me want to cry because the way you said it was exactly why my grandmother, why they came here. Because they mm-hmm. saw this as a land of freedom, a land that would allow them to be who they are and not be judged. And, you know, and here we are, we're judging people in ways that, you know, I mean, you know, there's a saying, judge not or ye shall be judged, you know. And right. and you also talk about a higher power. You know, I believe that, too. I believe that there's a universal force that brings us all together as humanity. And that force is once we get on that train, so to speak, everything is possible. But if we're, like you say, if we're complicit, it's not going to happen. Well, you know something? We're running out of time so fast, I can't stand it. So I wanted, this is my last question to you, and that is two things. Number one, in your life, what is the one thing that you would want to say to people? That, you know, whatever's in your heart, I want you to just open up and just say whatever you feel is right. But also, talk about yourself a little bit, how we can get a hold of you. What are some of the things you're doing? I know you're doing a lot of public speaking. I mean, I am so appreciative that you did this interview. I mean, it's just, this is, to me, is the whole essence of Black History Month, that we have to understand that it's not easy. And, you know, the first letter in struggle is S, for it's a spiritual journey for all of us. That's how I, that's how I equate it. So tell us how we can get a hold of you, what you're doing, and any last words that you feel are important that you want my listeners to hear.
Well, first and foremost, if someone wants to reach me, they have Internet Movie Database, IMDb. My manager, Joanne Kincaid, or my agent, their phone numbers are listed, and you can reach me that way. And I'm an artist, and I'm an actress. I speak only because to whom much is given. My mother used to say, much is expected, and much is required. Which is why I'm out here speaking. But I, you know, I'm an actress, I'm an artist, and that's how I make a living. So I'm, you know, I'm definitely not a rich woman. I'm a, you know, struggling artist. But I do this because I know that somebody has to do it, and I cannot be afraid. If I can just do a small modicum of what my dad and Uncle Martin and my mother and Uncle Retta did to change the world in my lifetime, then, you know, great will be my reward in heaven. And so I have to stand up, and hopefully I'm able to inspire other people to stand up and also to talk about our history, because our history informs us as to how we need to live today. And I have to do my part. I really and truly have to do my part, and that's what I'm trying to do as an artist, as an actress, and as a public speaker. And all I want to say to everyone, do not be afraid. Do not be cowards that run. Have courage. And courage is when you are afraid, but you go forward anyway. My dad used to tell me how Uncle Martin sometimes was afraid. But he was so courageous because despite the fear that he felt inside and the intimidation because they kept telling them they were going to kill them, they still went forward because they knew that they were doing God's will.
What a beautiful way to end this wonderful conversation. From the bottom of my heart, I want to thank you for being on Women's Spaces. And you know that, you know, I'm behind you 1,000%. I mean, I'm about to cry. This has been such a beautiful, beautiful emotional interview for me. And I want to thank you. Do you have a website that people can get a hold of you, or an email?
There's a website and there's an email on that website, but there's a man who monitors that website for me. I don't do it. And then if there's an email, I mean, it's through the website. You know, it's donzalay.com or donzalayabernathy.com, and he gets it and then he sends it to me. But the best way to reach me is through my manager, Joanne Kincaid, which is KincaidJoan@gmail.com. And so it's KincaidJoan, Joan, @gmail.com. And that's how to reach me.
Well,
I'm not a part of an organization, so I'm an actor. I'm an artist.
Well, I will have everything that you have just told me listed on www.womenspaces.com. I'll have the name of your agent, the name of your all the different information that you've given me. From the bottom of my heart, thank you so much. And if you ever need anything, any announcements or anything that's going on that you need a little bit of support, you know you can always get a hold of me.
Yes, and just so you all know, I love the people of Santa Rosa.
Well, thank you,
I do. Oh, my goodness. I love Santa Rosa, so maybe one day I'll retire up there in the mountains with all of you beautiful people. Beautiful people. I love it up there.
Just remember, we have a spare bedroom. Anyway, folks, that's it for our show. A special thank you to Donzelea Abernathy, who's the daughter of civil rights leader Ralph David Abernathy. He was a reverend, and Juanita Jones Abernathy. And as we saw, her mother was a driving force behind her. She's accomplished activist, actor, author, and has appeared on several TV and radio talk shows. And it's just wonderful. What she talks about is ordinary women doing extraordinary things. Anyway, like I always do, I remind my listeners, our children are the future, and we must never, never lose sight of that. And also, Women's Space will be aired again Monday evening. I get to listen to my show, and I'm really excited. This is Elaine B. Holtz. You've been listening to Women's Spaces. Thank you so much for listening, and I look forward to being with you the next time.
She knows everything you do because the woman in your life is you. And who is sure to give you courage? And who surely make you stronger. Who will bear all the joy that is coming to you if not a woman in your life? As she's someone to pursue. She's patient and she's waiting, and she'll take you home now.
The previous Women's Spaces show was recorded on Monday, February 24th, 2025.